Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and every week I'll be interviewing a special guest talking about how to set up a business or how to launch a new product in the local market. Welcome to this week's edition of Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Simon Azapardi. Today we're going to be talking about how to build your business plan. Simon, so why do you actually need to write a business plan?
As a business plan, essentially what it does is it puts your idea, your plan, what you want to do from a business perspective on paper. And that allows you to self-criticize or look at this document and understand whether it makes sense. Another reason why you would want to do it is to communicate this plan or this business idea to a third party, like a bank or an investor or someone, other stakeholder that you'd want to get involved.
What sort of things should you include in a business plan? What are the basic necessities? What points need to be in there?
I think rather than looking at what points, I think the first question you need to ask is the real reason why you're writing it. If you're writing a business plan and that is to sell an idea to yourself, mm-hmm. because you are not convinced of it, then a business plan might not be the right way of going down the whole planning stage. There are other tools you can use for testing hypotheses or testing whether a business venture makes sense. And a business plan would come much later when you're more convinced of a plan, and it's rather than having only one road, you don't have a thousand roads that you can go down. But yes, I mean, essentially, the elements that you would include in a business plan would have to be obviously your financials. I think that is mm-hmm. A critical thing, making sure you get your numbers right in terms of costings and predicting what type of revenues you can get. And then looking at the various other factors, such as your marketing, your resources, your activities, and what's going to happen, what you're actually going to do in the first 24, 36 months, if you can look so far ahead.
And so do you write the business plan once you've had the idea, like you said, to self-criticize and make sure that the business is viable? Or do you get to the stage where you potentially have a prototype and then you write your business plan when you're looking to finance it further? Is there a rule?
Okay, so if your business is adopting a standard, typical, traditional business model, then you could, at a very early stage, start putting pen to paper and actually writing down some of the details. If, however, you don't know where this is going to take you, then you end up writing a document where you're for the sake of writing that document. It is very difficult to have an accurate plan at day one when you don't know what day two is going to look like. So, you know, it wouldn't make sense if you're having something which is slightly different to the norm. If you're going down the route of having something which is different, then you'd go down the business model canvas. What that will do essentially is it will allow you to create or come up with certain hypotheses on your business model, and then change parameters within that hypothesis to come up with a plan that would make sense. It also allows you to test certain business models very quickly without having to spend hours on end having to actually write a heavy document.
So you keep referring to business models. What types of business models are there, and do specific ones work? Say you're writing an e-commerce or an app versus a physical product. Do the business models vary, or are there specific models for specific types of businesses?
Okay, so when we talk about innovation in business, normally what you're talking about is there are generally three types, but two tend to get the most attention. One is innovation in technology, so you've created something which is innovative and has never been seen before, or applied technology which has never been done before. The second one is an innovation around the business model. The second one obviously being where you actually change a business model rather than the technology. In this case, we can use Uber as an example. Uber are a taxi company. Taxi companies have been around for decades. What they have changed is simply the business model on how to deliver a service. So they don't actually own any taxis. And all they use is a community of taxi drivers. The taxi drivers would own their own car, so it's their own personal car, and they would deliver a service using a crowd, using people who, the general public, basically. Another model which is quite popular in Malta and has been receiving some attention would be Airbnb, who have done the exact same thing, but within the travel tourism space. So they would compete against hotels. And rather than going to a hotel, you'd go to someone's house and he would rent out a room or his apartment out to the public. So again, it's I think one of the largest hotel, travel, accommodation businesses, but yet they don't own any property.
So when these business plans, you referred to a business model canvas. So on there, could you just talk us through the things that would be on a business model canvas so that listeners can perhaps look at the headings and start to consider what they would write?
Okay, so the business model canvas is nothing but a business plan broken down and simplified. It's something which can be Googled. If you Google it, you'd find a lot of references and information on it. And what it talks about is the various elements within your business that you'd need to test against or need to document in some way. So to begin with, there's obviously the first one would be your value proposition. Okay. A value proposition is basically saying, explaining what value you are creating for your customers. So what problem are you solving? And talking about this value creation in some detail. Over here, when anything to do with the business model canvas, you need to be as specific or as accurate or as detailed as possible.
So the business model canvas is actually one pager, essentially. It's not like a very thick business plan that you imagine.
Yes, exactly. So it's essentially a one pager, okay. Which I would recommend you stick on a wall. You grab post-it notes and you stick these post-it notes into the various boxes or elements within that canvas.
So once you've done your value propositions, where do you go from there?
The next one would be your customer segments. So over here, what we're talking about is understanding or documenting or listing the type of customers that you're going to be targeting. So let's apply it. So if we're talking about these espresso pod type of products that are out there, obviously this is something very new. It is something which is very innovative. But it is not just the way coffee is made. A lot of the innovation happens around its own business model. So if you have to look at the value proposition, it's being able to make a good, decent quality coffee at home with very little knowledge and expertise. In terms of customer segments, you could say it would be any coffee drinker, but it's not. If you had to look at your standard instant coffee, they also have a customer segment, and that would be very different from your standard instant to your coffee machine fan who would want a particular machine at home. So that would probably be someone who enjoys a cup of coffee and is a bit more fussy or a bit more of a
coffee snob.
That's yes, exactly. A bit more of a coffee snob, but probably you'd fit within a certain demographic, so you'd have certain revenues or cash that you can spend every month on things that you like, which would be very different to your standard instance. To continue going through the canvas,
yes, please.
If you have to look at your type of relationship that you're going to have with your customer. So again, in the case of these coffee pods type of businesses, it's pretty standard e-commerce type of businesses. This is just actually how it started off. Today, it's down the standard retail distribution. In terms of channel, channel, it started off online and today has moved completely offline. So now you have distribution channels through your supermarkets, technology shops, as well as online retailers.
And physical shops. So there are shops around just selling coffee pods, which surprises me.
so it had started off only selling items online. That is how it started. So they were selling machines at a reduced price, and they still do today. So they don't really make that much revenues or that much profits from these machines. But where the real money comes from is these pods. So the pods is the big money maker, and it's something that you buy again and again and again once you buy the machine. So they tie you in.
And they get you addicted to new flavors, and they can keep you on the hook, essentially, by giving you more and more types of coffee.
Exactly. Exactly. So they start coming up with new lines, new different coffee flavors, whether it's cold and hot. So they've got quite a range. So if you had to look at sort of the positive side of a business in terms of anything that creates value, so your customers and how you reach your customers and the relationship you have with your customers, all of this basically creates value, which hopefully means creates revenue. And this is essentially what you need to define. So how much revenue will the value I create have? What is that value of revenue? Obviously, there are two sides to every coin, and you obviously need to look at what you're actually going to do within that business and the cost elements behind that business.
So in this scenario, you're looking at the revenue stream would be from the machine, from the pods, and potentially from the accessories to hold your pods,
yes,
or the, you know, a stirrer or a cup, a coffee mug, etc. So those elements are what you would put in the revenue streams box. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
And from there?
Okay, so from there you look at your cost base. So for you to make this happen, essentially you need to have resources, infrastructure, people to make it happen. And this resources, infrastructure, and people need to actually create something for you to deliver this whole value proposition, this whole business, what you want to do. So
you're talking that the sales and marketing, the product developer,
yes,
that sort of.
So, and again, this goes down into the analysis of what you actually want to do as a business. So if we had to look at these coffee pods, again, machines, to stick to the same example, when they had started out, what they were doing is essentially they were creating a, they had actually partnered with pod machine manufacturers, and then these pod machine manufacturers were responsible for the sales and marketing of these machines, and then they were selling the pods as the consumable. This is sort of the initial business model, which had failed miserably. The reason for that is that the companies that were creating the machines did not have the expertise to be able to sell and market it. So what they did is they took a slightly different approach, and they simply outsourced the manufacturing of these machines, and then were responsible for the sales and marketing of those machines, and then obviously plugged in the consumable, i.e. the pods, after that.
Okay.
So if you had to look at how that business model changed in itself, you'd say, okay, so the entities or the partners, so to speak, involved within that business model obviously changed, as well as the activities of that business. So within this space, key partners would obviously be manufacturers of these coffee pod machines. They also may be manufacturers of the pods or the consumables that you're going to create. And if you had to look, sort of dig deeper into what these businesses actually do, most of them is around the sales and marketing. So any manufacturing is outsourced through patent, through process, which is owned by that company.
Okay.
However, as an activity, it is purely sales and marketing. So then again, if you had to look at its partners, it would be manufacturing. If you had to look at its key activities, so what it does on a day-to-day basis, it is sales and marketing, as well as R&D, so looking at what new products they can throw into these this type of business. And in terms of key resources, in terms of what the business needs in terms of resources to make this happen, a lot of it is skill set, so people who are able to understand sales and marketing and implement sales and marketing effectively, as well as distribution.
And obviously, in addition to that, you'd have to account for where these people are going to work from, the tools that they're going to need to do their jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So all of that needs to be within your cost structure element of your business model canvas.
Yes. So once you look at, you know, your key partners, your activities and your resources, then you break it down, or you dig deeper into the cost structure of each element.
Okay.
So if you have sales, and sales need to be on a plane and need to be traveling, then obviously you have to apply your travel costs. Etc. Etc.
Excellent. So that's the business model canvas that we're suggesting people can Google, so they can see the elements to fill in to be able to see if they have a viable business, essentially.
Yes. So business model canvas is excellent because you can have multiple business models for your same idea, and then look at what variables you can change within that canvas. And it's quite simple and easy to do. So being able to say, okay, what would happen if I had to change an element within this business model. So if I had to change the value proposition, for example, of my business, how will it change my customer or my customer type? How will it change the relationship I have with that customer? And everything sort of flows off from there.
Okay. But this isn't guesswork. This is something you can't just fill in, and just because you feel like this is something you have to do, go back to the market research, checking out who the customers really would be, the size of that market, etc. It's not a an exercise you can do in an evening. It's something that will take you...
Actually, it is.
Ah, okay.
So it is an exercise that you can do in like a few minutes. It doesn't mean that once you finish that exercise, then what you've actually documented is correct.
Okay.
So what you're doing is essentially you're making huge assumptions on what you think would be your customer and what you think would be that relationship you'd have with that customer. But then after you do the business model canvas, after you fill it up, then you need to test that hypothesis. You need to validate, and see whether these would be your partners, these would be your customers, this would be the type of relationships, and make sure that whatever you have put into that canvas is in fact correct. You will notice as you do this iteratively that you will be wrong, and this is a normal process. And the more times you are wrong, the better it is, because you're getting closer to the truth. Eventually, you come to a point where you're feeling confident or more comfortable in the hypothesis that you have made, and then you can start talking about a business plan.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Simon Atzafardi. We're discussing how to build a business plan. This show is aired on Wednesdays at 9:30 and repeated again on Thursdays at 1:30. So now you've completed the business model canvas and you have all of those elements filled up. What happens next?
Once you filled up your canvas and you have a better idea of what your business is going to look like, obviously the next step would be probably looking for either some form of financing or some form of partners or bringing on some third party that can help your business become a reality. To do this, you need to have some form of documentation. You need to have something which gives this third party, the stakeholder, these new people that you want to bring on board, something that they can read, that they can refer to, that they can understand and digest in a bit more detail. So saying, listen, this is my idea and this is what I want to do and this is how it will work is not enough. Going into both the numbers as well as how execution is going to happen is critical. And a business plan is a good way of doing this. Not the only way, but certainly a good way of doing this.
So what should a business plan then include? What does it need to look like and feel like? I'm imagining you should be able to have a one-liner to be able to get somebody to pay attention to your business plan. But then what's in the business plan?
So a business plan has all of the elements within your canvas. So you'd obviously talk about your customers or the market side. You talk about your costs. You talk about your activities. So you talk about all of the elements within your canvas, and you simply go into more detail. So as you're going through, as I said before, when writing your canvas, you're coming up with hypotheses, mm-hmm. and you're validating. As you're validating, you're learning. As you're learning, you should document. So you should capture what you've learned in some form of document. Little by little, you can start transferring that into as part of your market research, which would make up part of your business plan. So as you move along, as you're understanding how all of the components within your business are going to fit together, that is where you get your information from, and you start sticking it into this one document. In terms of length, there isn't really a standard length for a business plan. If you had to go to a large consultancy firm, they give you, you know, multiple hundreds and hundreds of pages for your business plan. However, if you can fit it into 10, I would say fit it into 10, if it has enough detail for you to explain what you need to explain. So more is not always better in the case of a business plan, unlike cake. Obviously, there are a couple of rules. So things like if you are going to write a business plan and it is not your standard retail, so it's something which is technologically complex or involves something which has a lot of jargon, try to avoid using that jargon or simplify it.
Okay, because obviously the person you're talking to may not be an expert in your field, but maybe a bank.
Right? Yes. So if you are speaking to a bank, then your bank manager needs to understand what you're on about. If you're speaking to an investor, the investor might not be exposed to that particular technology or industry, so you still need to break it down. I mean, I would recommend if your mother can understand it, or a man in the street can understand it, or your grandmother can understand it, then that's a good place to start. If they can't, then I would simplify it even further. So you're keeping it as simple, as straightforward, as avoid jargon, you know, so don't use words like, you know, this is an innovative product, you know, why is it innovative? Explain the value, explain something which is concrete, something realistic and factual. The second thing is a business plan is there to be as realistic as possible, so avoid trying to sell it as much as possible. So try and be a bit factual. If there are risks, list the risks. It shows that you're mature. If you think that everything is going to work and everything is going to be fine and dandy, then from a bank, from an investor's perspective, they would probably shy away. You know, so yes, show that you believe in the product or idea or venture, but be realistic about it. You know, be clear that, you know, these are the risks, these are the things that can go wrong, and just be factual about it. A business plan is also an opportunity to manage expectations. So if you are getting a stakeholder, a third party on board, whether it could be a supplier, and you want to share like a version of your business plan with a supplier, you might want to use this document in a way to manage the expectations of this third party coming on board. So you don't want to say, listen, you know, we're going to be making millions in the first few months. But, you know, you show progression, you show growth at a realistic rate. You might even want to have, you know, an optimistic and a pessimistic view of what can happen, but be realistic and manage that expectation.
So if you've done your sums and you've done all the work and you actually see that you're not going to make money for the first year, is that a bad thing to have in your business plan? Would that be a turnoff, or what's the usual expectation for you to be able to break even and make your first cent?
So a lot of it depends on what type of business you have, one, and two, the burn rate that you'd have in order to get there.
So burn rate is?
So burn rate is the amount of money that you spend every month for you to operate.
Right, okay.
Okay, so just to give an example, if you need 2,000 euros a month for 12 months to start actually making something, so you have a burn rate of 2,000 euros a month and a cost base of 24,000 euros a year. And at day one, so when you launch, so you'd have your 24,000 euro investment that you'd need. Is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. If obviously you'd want to get to market as quickly as possible, and that you're touching on the subject of MVP, of minimal viable product, okay, of getting something onto market as quickly as possible, even if that something is not perfect, but simply solves the problem, doing it in the shortest amount of time, and testing your hypothesis, testing as you go along. So
once you've finalized your business plan, what should it physically look like? Should it have lots of pictures and diagrams and things in, or is this literally the business case, the numbers, the statistics, the validation of the idea?
Okay, so again, this depends on the type of business. So if your business is a fund of a fund structure, some super complex financial type of business, then you'd expect maybe some graphs, but a lot of sort of content and you know, very, you know, complex
detail
and math stuff. If you're going down something which is, you know, some new designer type of sunglasses, then obviously the design aspect is important. So A, showing that even within the business plan, you are design competent, and maybe a couple of styles of what these sunglasses are going to look like, then obviously you'd want that to reflect within your business plan. So I think a business plan needs to reflect on a bit on your brand that you're going to create. Again, there's no real hard and fast rule when it comes to writing a business plan, so there's no expectation that you need to fill. I think expectations would come much later on When you're looking for, I don't know, a large investment, or you have an acquisition, a merger and acquisition coming up, and that is when you'd have certain details or certain standards that you need to follow. But typically by then you'd have a big consultancy firm backing you up and doing all the legwork, which you'd want to avoid now.
So once you've written this business plan, your product is now launched, what's the lifetime of your business plan, in fact? Is it till launch, or does the business plan have to have a life longer than day one of your product being on the market?
So, a bit of a personal view, I think there are two types of business plans. There's a business plan that you would give to a bank manager, where you're maybe trying to sell it as a concept, you're trying to win the bank manager over. A second business plan is something for you. It is a document which is alive, a document which is going to be changing continuously after you launch and even before you launch, and will continue to adapt to circumstances as they change from day to day.
Okay. So as you go along, the life of the plan can change along with the expectations of your customers who are going to be buying your product and the next version 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Yes.
They're on in.
And as time goes by, you'd learn things, and things would need to tweak. The market is never constant, so market is always changing, and you need to change with it.
And this obviously goes back into your, you go back to your business model canvas, I would guess, to start the process from there.
Yes, I mean, essentially using the tools that are made available to you. So if you're more comfortable in writing a document because text is something you're more comfortable with, use that. If post-it notes and a canvas is more comfortable, then go for that.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Simon Azzopardi is my this week's guest on the Entrepreneur Clinic. We've been talking about business plans and business model canvases and how to prepare them. Next week, I'll be talking to Fiona Ewins-Brown about staffing and when and how to hire your team. Thank you very much for listening. You've been listening to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers. The programme is aired every Wednesday on Campus FM at 9:30 a.m. and repeated on Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. Join us again next week to hear more about your journey in starting up a new business or launching a new product.